You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Vargas? We don't need no Vargas. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
I've always depended on the kindness. Strange.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Would you be shocked if I put on something more comfortable?
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. As always, I'm Paul, one of your hosts, and I want to apologize for not having an episode last week.
It's all your fault.
It is all my fault, and the deadly pandemic. Unfortunately, producer Melanie and I did fall subject to the infamous COVID, and we were ready to record. Like, we were, like, set to go. We had plans, and just suddenly I was like, well, I can't move. Weird. But we are back. We are continuing Star Wars Month. Obviously, we may have to take one of the later movies out of rotation.
I was thinking we just combine Solo and Rogue One into one episode.
I could do that, too. We'll see.
I mean, what? Solo will take a five-minute discussion?
It sucked. But anyway, we are excited, though. As always, like I said, Paul, one of your hosts. With me in the studio today is Sean. Sean, how are you?
I am good. The Force is strong with you, Maglietta.
And also with you?
Well, you didn't have to tell I was the Force strong, but you know, I was just trying to make you feel better.
I feel like if anybody in this room is going to have the Force, it's going to be the next person we introduce.
Oh, well, I mean, dude, have you seen his Force? It's huge.
I prefer my Schwartz.
Oh. Yeah,
it's the same size as yours, by the way. But anyway, we do have a special guest in the studio today from the YouTube sensation, the YouTube Magic the Gathering channel, BlindBad87. We have our dear... Well, I mean, we know him. I was going to say dear friends, but like, we know him. Our good friend, Brendan. Brendan, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. I'm doing very well.
Brendan sat so quietly waiting for his cue.
I'm trying to be really good with the podcast. And like I said, I'm mostly on the YouTube thing. I have the channel for on YouTube, BlindBat8719. And yeah, if you guys are fans of Magic the Gathering and you like playing on Arena, I focus on the Brawl format, which is a 100-card singleton format. So if you like, you want to see some Magic videos, come check out my channel on YouTube.
And it's not Magic like... Is this your card Magic?
Oh, no, you're right. It's not Magic Tricks. I'm referring to it. It's Magic the Gathering. It's a trading card game. It started in like 94. It's like over 25 years old now, actually.
I know. I didn't want to say that I was disappointed, but I was like, oh, I know Magic the Gathering.
It's kind of Magic, though.
Yeah, I know, right? And you can also check out Sean's OnlyFans when you have a chance.
Oh, how do you get on that, by the way?
I have no idea. What are you talking about? But anyway, I just feel like we needed to plug Sean for something.
By the way, you owe me $5 for your membership.
Oh, God. Every month. But anyway, you're worth more than that, buddy. Don't worry.
I appreciate it.
$5.95. It's almost like $6, but it's easier to digest.
Oh, it's this marketing scheme, like all the old stores.
Oh, my God. All those old infomercials, too. Like, $19.95. Just say $20.
Yeah.
Just say it.
Yeah, it's a weird marketing scheme.
Plus shipping and handling.
Oh, man, I don't want to handle it. Can I just get shipping? But anyway, so now that this show's completely got off the rails.
God, I love it.
Oh, yeah. So,
I missed this.
So quick.
God,
so
why'd you have to get sick?
Oh, God. That's what I said. Oh, my God. I missed Doctor Strange. I had to avoid spoilers for a whole week.
Yeah, we were all praying for you when we walked out of the theater. We were like, he's not going to make it till next week.
You know what? I only got spoiled on one thing. I won't say what it is in this episode, but in the breakout.
Make sure you listen to our next episode on the Multiverse Fancast.
That's going to be up next. But don't forget also, guys, if you check out our brand new website, you can find...
is it brand new, though?
If you check out our website, you can find our brand new Misfit Faction store on there, is what I tried to say. We have all sorts of content on there. And this is the last month to get our long sleeve shirt for Cinematic Adventures. So make sure if you guys haven't picked it up yet... Hey, Sean, coughing's my thing tonight, so I really appreciate it if you just kind of drop that.
So I stepped in this house and all started coughing. That's not good.
Oh, weirdest come on.
Thing. Actually, for the record, after my wife and I got exposed, Sean and I, we recorded Phantom Menace right like the next day.
But you didn't know.
No. I thought I was just hungover. No. But so we are excited because Phantom Menace was a blast. We had a lot of fun.
A lot of fun with that one. A
lot of fun. And in the interim, we did have Star Wars Day.
We did.
May 4th.
And I think what was so great about the Phantom Menace episode is that the two of us really kind of, you know, looked back and we were like, you know, this movie's actually not that bad.
Right.
The Phantom Menace, you know, in a way has become a running joke over the last 20 plus years. Honestly, until we got the new trilogy, and then the respect for that movie, I think, has grown just because people were like, wow, look what we had and look what we've gotten, you know. So
I'm very excited for when we tackle the new trilogy because I feel like it's going to be a lot of mixed emotions.
It'll be mixed, but I'm sure, you know, we'll watch the movies obviously before. It'll be another year before we do that, and you know, maybe there'll be something about those movies that we'll end up liking than we did the first time we saw them. I mean, you're
Dameron.
We do like Poe.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Oscar Isaac is a gem.
He is. He's one of him and I know
the guy who played Finn.
No. I'm going different genre right now. The Red Viper from Game of Thrones. That actor.
No, I don't know. Melanie.
Those are
Game
my
Thrones.
Two new this generation. Like my two new favorite actors, Oscar Isaac. And I am not, the Red Viper. We're just going to go with that.
That's a badass name. Yeah.
It is. It is a very badass. He's a very badass character.
Love it. But so before we do that, do we have any news that we wanted to?
Well, a little news I know you would enjoy because you were a big fan of the Teen Wolf TV series on MTV. Apparently, Paramount Plus will be making a movie. I guess you could say like a movie reunion of the TV show and the star of Superman and Lois, Tyler Hoechlin, is going to be returning for that. So that is good for the fans of that show. We have, obviously, Doctor Strange has reached $550 million
barely
in its overall gross.
Yeah.
So that is good. Marvel continues to make money. I don't think Marvel will ever make a movie that doesn't make at least $500 million.
Right.
So, you know, Marvel just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. Other than that, nothing too crazy has happened. We actually did lose a really good actor just released today. Fred Ward passed away at the age of 79. For any of you Tremors fans out there, I think that's like the one he's most known for.
Yeah.
Big character actor. He was in Escape from Alcatraz and a bunch of... I know him from the Naked Gun, the third Naked Gun movie. He plays the villain in that movie. I always found him funny in that. So sad news there.
I have a few guilty pleasure, two in particular for Fred Ward. One is Road Trip. He plays.
Oh, that's
DJ
right.
Qualls
he plays
dad.
DJ Qualls' father.
And
this
is a deep cut. Corky Romano.
Still never seen it.
Oh, it's so bad, but he's fun in it. But yeah, it's a shame. You know,
yeah.
Fred Ward. But
that's about it on the news there, Paul.
I do want to eventually do an episode on Teen Wolf just because it is such a... It's one of those things that they changed the genre so dramatically from the movies.
Okay, biggest change. Teen Wolf movie to Teen Wolf TV show. Buffy movie to Buffy TV show.
Teen Wolf.
Because Teen Wolf is just totally...
Teen Wolf was like 80s comedy, like pure... like. It doesn't even match the tone.
Oh, no. I agree
like, or
that.
Or the characters. Like, they even name the characters the same.
Yeah, Styles.
Styles
and
Scott.
God.
But
yeah, Buffy, that was, I think, Joss Whedon saw the TV show as a complete reinvention of the thing. Because he didn't
but
want
the
to
spirit,
do
this. The spirit of the movie was still there. It was quippy. It was funny. It was, you know, like a nice balance
of
genres.
Not as corny, maybe, yeah.
Right. But Teen Wolf, the TV show, was actually... I will defend that show to death. It was really good, especially for an MTV drama.
Which, no, I don't think growing up, you're like, I don't think I have much faith in this. It should be music videos, TRL, and maybe Road Rules and the house one, whatever the other one was.
Yeah, Real House.
Real
World.
The Real World.
Real House. No, but and also that show gave us Dylan O'Brien, and he's just a gem, and I really want to see him do some more work.
Yeah, what happened? He's kind of like falling off.
He was doing really well with like the Maze Runner stuff, and then he got into like a car accident.
Oh,
and
really?
There's a big fan push for him to be the cinematic or the DCEU's version of Nightwing.
Oh, nice.
I think he'd be a good choice. Right. But so yeah, that kind of wraps up news. Before we jump into our main topic, obviously, we have to ask Brendan what his thoughts were on Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
All right. I actually thought the movie was I thought it was like you guys thought it was better than people give it credit for. I remember going back then. I think I was excited, like, oh my god, it's the first Star Wars, because my dad taught. I grew up with it with my dad, and he telling me about, like, you know, the first time you see Episode IV and the big ships coming across the TV screen, like, that was a memorable moment. I'm like, oh, it's my turn to finally get something like that, and I'm like. And I got there, and like, and I think I probably had fun with the movie. I did think that Darth Maul was the coolest looking thing ever. And I'm like, why the frick did you kill him at the end like that? I was so disappointed to see
But did they?
Well, that's a whole other thing. Well, at the time.
At the time,
you're like, that was a waste of a character. I was I wanted to see him a few more times. He's himself, especially with that double lightsaber. Like, that was badass.
Yeah.
So that was, I was really excited about that. And then. Yeah, I mean, that was much really it.
It's when you said that, because it, you know, it really hits you that we didn't see the Star Wars movies in theaters first run. We obviously, you know, I'm assuming you did. We saw the special editions when they were released to theaters right before the prequel trilogy came out, and you know, just to have that experience, that first time that the Star Wars logo just comes at you and the crawl and music and. It's just, it's what a moment. And I mean,
it is movie magic, really.
It really is. It's the definition of movie magic is the opening to Star Wars, in my opinion. I agree with you totally there. And, you know, as a kid, you watch Phantom Menace, and yes, it's slow. It's a slow-paced film because you have
and
to...
And who's Qui-Gon Jinn? Like, you know,
yeah,
we know
like
who
you've
we
never
want
heard
is.
Of this. So, you know, as kids and growing up, you know, we were like, okay, it was good, but, you know, it could have been better. And as we'll talk about in this movie, I will honestly say when the movie we're about to talk about, Attack of the Clones, came out, I was like, oh my god, this is so much better than Phantom Menace. And 20 years later,
no.
Wait for it, tease, I think we'll talk about in a little bit, but you know, you'll hear my thoughts on that.
I'll be the first to say it. Attack of the Clones is the weakest of the
prequel trilogy.
Prequel trilogy. It is painful at points.
Well, I think you say it could fall into the obvious trap of being the middle movie, and that could be part of it. But because the
third script, pure script.
Well, because the third one, you have the excitement because you know it. That it was when
you know what's coming.
Well, yeah,
you're we're gonna get what we've been waiting for.
That
for
climactic
two
fight, at least you know you're gonna get that.
Yes.
The first one, you're interested. You're like, okay, where did this all start? And your second one, you're like, well,
what's the conflict gonna be in this movie? What could the conflict possibly be in this movie?
And I think again, Attack of the Clones. Like, okay, we discover maybe we'll have a Clone War thing, but it turns out that's suited to an animated cartoon show that you know that goes for like 6 seasons and 5 second clips before Toonami.
I saw the movie. I think we saw the attack of the Clone Wars movie. I have no recollection of it at all.
Yeah, with Ahsoka.
That's
when she gets introduced. Okay. Yeah, Ahsoka.
Did Hayden Christensen voice his character?
They all did. Just for that movie.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, not for the show. I kind of assumed that.
Yeah. We do need to talk about that at some point.
Well, I was thinking about that, and I was like, technically that falls in the prequel, and I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, but the Clone Wars, it's funny. This movie led to so much great material afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Clone Wars, both there was two different TV shows of the Clone Wars, and they're both fantastic.
Yeah,
And just like all the stuff leading into Revenge of the Sith, and then obviously Revenge of the Sith. I will say it's my favorite of the, and it's for the most part a lot of people's favorite. Of the prequel trilogy. But before we get into Attack of the Clones, we are going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we are, I guess, tearing apart or
having... we're going to be fair.
Having
we'll be
a
fair.
Spirited conversation.
We'll be slight roasting.
About Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. But first, a quick break. Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Raise Energy Drinks. Raise is a proud member of Rep Sports, and if you guys are looking for a little extra kick during your day, whether you need to tackle a workout or you need to get over that afternoon slump, you can always check out Raise Energy, and if you get to check out and you enter the code CINEMATIC, not only will you be getting a 15% discount, but you'll also be supporting the network. So that's Raise Energy with Rep Sports. Code is CINEMATIC, CINEMATIC. All right, we are back, and I'm actually very excited. I just watched this movie recently, and it's one of those. Unfortunately, this is the one of the prequel trilogy that I find myself
fast forwarding
if possible. I watched it on TNT just because they did the marathon, and obviously my wife and I had COVID, so we had nothing to do but watch Star Wars. Even she watched it, and she's not the biggest Star Wars fan.
What would it take to get your wife to watch Star Wars? Wow,
global pandemic, near death. But the fact that I had the remote and she didn't have the energy to get it.
Oh, that does it. Yeah. No, I made a conscious effort to rewatch this because I hadn't remembered it in so long. And I was like, oh my God, the cringe. This will not, if this was made today, it would not survive today's climate with all the things that he says wrong.
Yeah. I would even say the acting and screenplay are worse in this movie. Like, as we talked about Jake Lloyd and his portrayal of Anakin Skywalker in the first movie, and we didn't give him as much grief. I will give Hayden, and I could give Hayden Christensen some grief, but also I think we mentioned it in Phantom Menace. George Lucas is not the best dialogue guy, and that's the reason he didn't direct the first three Star Wars.
He directed the first one.
He didn't direct the second and third Star Wars.
Okay, so here's where the difference between the original trilogy and this trilogy goes with the script. George Lucas obviously wrote the script for the first one, and it's, you know, something people have never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
When the second one comes around, he knows that, you know, he needs to, like, you know, stretch this out a little bit. He knows he needs to touch it up. So what does he do? He hires Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, who directed, you know, The Big Chill, one of the best movies ever done. He is just perfect when it came to writing the script. So that's why, like, the original trilogy, the script is not the problem. In this one, it's all him, and just, it's not there.
No.
It's not there.
And also, he's directing it, too, and it may be a testament to, a good director is able to bring out certain emotions and certain just reactions from their actors.
Mm.
It's funny, because especially in, like, television, people think that the director's the most important part. In television, usually those are just guest directors. Like, Kevin Smith talks about, he did a lot of Flash and Supergirl.
Okay.
And he openly said, he's like, it's like, because his episodes were really good, he's like, it's not me, per se. Like, they do their thing. They do this every week, and they have their scripts and their stories, and I'm just there to kind of...
Every now and then, they can add a little, like, special touch to an episode that...
Director trademark or something like that. Even, like, for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, not to spoil anything, but just because we just watched it last night, you could see some of the director flair.
Yes,
but definitely. For the most part, it's still a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, Marvel directors have said, like, look at Edgar Wright years ago wanting to do A-Man.
We actually talked about it at the beginning of Phantom Menace episode with our news, is that another director, you know, was parted ways amicably, but parted ways with Marvel on the new Fantastic Four. And I was just like, you know, this has happened a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's never been antagonistic where, like, wow, I refuse to ever work with Marvel. It's just... The director has a vision.
Yep.
Marvel's just like, no, you're going to do it this way.
Because we make money.
And yeah, maybe you can tack on a few things that are you, but you can't vary from our formula.
Mm-hmm.
And some directors are like, okay. And some directors are like, yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, George Lucas, the man has only made, let me rephrase that. The man has only directed 5 movies in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He directed Star Wars, the prequel trilogy, and American Graffiti. That's it.
That's a good one.
Those are the only movies he's ever directed.
You didn't do THX 1338?
Thank you. I apologize. All THX 1138.
Just looking into that one.
See? This is why Brandon's here. I apologize for that. Yes, THX 1138, he did direct that. So, you know, he's not Martin Scorsese. He's not Spielberg. When it comes to that, but he's given us so much in terms of the technology.
Well,
I mean, you know, that's where he differs. Like, his vision, not just for the franchise, but for what we could do technologically. That's where George Lucas, to me, is one of the greatest, you know, directors that
innovators.
We've ever gotten.
Yeah.
Innovators, you
but
know,
it doesn't
like
always work sometimes, because I feel like the big thing about what you're saying with Jar Jar Binks, it was him trying to push to have the all animated character, you know, the complete CGI character. And then even with I remember I have a note here from in the beginning of the movie, the green screen, like, it's so glaringly like you are not there. You are standing on a platform and something is like, whereas the other worlds, you know, in the other movies, say the originals, maybe because they were more built
like sets. It was all practical.
It felt, and that was one of the more appeals of the original trilogy.
I agree with you, and that's the one. That's the one big thing I have with Lucas, is that he was so hell bent on adding all this technology that he didn't have access to back in the 70s and the 80s. But he didn't, like, it didn't either It just doesn't look right.
It doesn't, mesh
look right.
Yeah, and I think the original stuff looked lived in, and I think that was when Mate kind of sold the idea of like this is a real world because it looked lived in. And yes, I know where I think this movie takes place. I think it's Bespin it takes in or Coruscant, and which is a place we hadn't seen before, but it just looks so shiny and new, and it's like. This probably is what the Old Republic probably should have looked like, not something that was 50 years earlier.
There's been a lot of arguments about why the world of Star Wars looks so different. In all honesty, it's because in the sequel trilogy, we spent most of our times either on a spaceship or a space station.
Yep.
Or in more of like the dirtier, like the Tatooines and stuff like that. So I don't have a problem per se. Like Coruscant was like the capital of... So yes, it should look shiny and nice. Naboo is a little bit more like... polished and off to the side because they were playing more with the idea of the here's our upper class above surface dwellers, here's the Gungans, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do understand how people see that. But so let's start at the very beginning of this, and obviously we like to start with casting because everybody knew that there was going to be an episode 2 and it was going to continue the story because, you know, Phantom Menace made plenty of money.
Yeah.
This movie, same thing, on a budget of about 115 back 20 years ago.
Jeez.
And it made almost 700 million. So it really did well.
When you think about why the budget, 115 million, yes, back in 2002, that might have seemed big. Right now, that doesn't seem big at all. It's because, I mean, the actors weren't like commanding huge salaries. I mean, Ewan McGregor wasn't like, you know, a huge A-list star.
I think the biggest star in this movie was Sam Jackson.
And then he's barely in the movie, you know. So it's, you know, I love when people say like the budget's so big. Well, the budgets are big because the actors' salaries are so huge a lot of times. But, you know, that's why like indie films are always great when you can get away with these low budget movies. You get a lot better, you know.
A Paranormal Activity. They spent like $4 million on, and it was mostly production stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it ends up making $600 million and a franchise. Like, sometimes less is more. Yeah. It really is.
Well, that's also one of the hallmarks, though, of horror is that, and I remember reading about this, some of this about Sam Raimi, the why they get started in horror is because it's cheap to make. You don't need much, and you can make a movie on a shoestring budget, essentially. So that's what we're saying with Paranormal. It's horror. It's cheaper.
Yeah, horror is always cheaper. So let's start with Ewan McGregor, because he is arguably the... Mm-hmm.
The star of the movie.
It's interesting because him and Anakin don't share most of the movie together.
No, they don't.
No, they get split up fairly early.
A third of the way in,
and then they don't see each other till the last half hour.
Now, so we've seen a lot of growth in Obi-Wan in this. I will be the first one to say, as much as I love Obi-Wan Kenobi and I love Ewan McGregor, he's kind of a dick in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. And for anyone who doesn't know, it's been a 10-year gap between the end of Phantom Menace and the beginning of Attack of the Clones. So he's a Jedi Knight. He's been training Anakin as his Padawan for 10 years. So...
Yeah.
There you go.
And it doesn't make the age difference between Padme and Anakin any better. But Obi-Wan is basically in this movie, he's investigating this assassination plot. And some things that I really, because I don't want to just bash this movie, some things that I really liked. I liked how he seemed to have a lot of different relationships with people. Like, obviously, he's been around a lot. And the scene of him walking into the bar and like the death sticks, he's like,
That was cool.
But it shows how smart he is. Yeah.
Harkens back to the famous, you know,
cantina scene.
Scene in the original.
That was my issue though with the bar scenes. Like, why did it have to be a bar? Why it just felt like this is one of the issues I think sometimes with the prequel stuff is it felt like they did things in the prequels because we did it in the original Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
So this was something where I'm like, why did it have to be a bar? Why'd you have to cut the guy's hand off? Why'd you got to do a mind trick on somebody?
Why does it have to be snakes?
Yeah, exactly. So that was something I was like, really.
Yeah,
really?
I do love his fight with Jango Fett. It's a lot of fun.
Yes,
one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Wars is Jango's got his hands tied up and he kicks him off the ledge. And then he realizes that his hands are still tied to Jango and he goes, oh, not good. I don't know what it is, but it always just makes me laugh. And it also, this movie shows how capable Obi-Wan Kenobi is as a fighter. Like, he fights without the lightsaber for a little. He goes against Dooku a little bit longer than Anakin does and a little bit smarter.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, for the most part, though, he's very sarcastic in this.
He's sarcastic. You could tell he's just that arrogant big brother to Anakin. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing Anakin can do is right. You know, so you get that sense early on in the movie that, oh, now I know why Anakin became, you know, Darth Vader.
Yeah. And even with their relationship, Anakin does speak very highly of him.
Yes,
but he also speaks like he also goes. You know, he's got that one little scene where you know he's venting to Padme.
He's holding me back.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, he does. He has two venting scenes: one on Tatooine, and one when they're packing up to go back to Naboo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He. All right. Let's talk about Anakin Skywalker. Hayden Christensen. Anakin is 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody that was a slave for 10 years and is now basically a more liberated slave, like the Jedi Order is not exactly Club Med. Like you're still, he's basically a warrior monk now.
Yes,
he is just whiny, so whiny, and just so cringy. And it's weird. Obi-Wan has gotten much more personable and much more social, and like he works well with people. Like the scene in the diner. When he's talking to the guy with the four arms, it's a great little scene. He knows how to schmooze the Kaminoans to figure out what's going on. But then there's Anakin going, I don't like sand.
Okay.
Why are you giving him a British accent?
That sand line, I think, is actually really perfect for the character. Because I think that's, you know, I feel like that explains his way of saying to her, I don't like sand. Why? Because I have very bad memories of sand. I don't like it at all. The next bit where he apparently says something like, not like you, you're soft. And he touches her in a weird spot. Like, why do you kiss him then? That is not wooing at all. I think the issue with Anakin, though, is if we didn't meet Padme at the beginning, we meet her, let's say, halfway through, and we get to see Anakin with Obi-Wan, and Anakin's interacting with people who are not his long-lost crush, I think he may have been more tolerable. But we go straight into, I like this girl. I haven't seen her
in 10 years.
I don't know how to get a girl to like me, so I'm going to do all the things that are really nice to make her notice me and realize. And then I think the ultimate burn was in the beginning. Oh, you'll always be that little boy. And I'm like, ooh.
He's so emo in it, though. Like, the word, you are in my very soul. Okay, all right. Pump the brakes.
But also, I don't think she turned the screen off. Why? I don't think she liked me watching her while she slept.
But so, they're only, I think they're about 7 years apart. They kind of established. She was like 14 or 15.
She was supposed to be 14 or 15. So yeah. She's now 25. Phantom. He's 18. Yeah. You know, whatever.
Still creepy. But uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. But Hayden Christensen was an absolute unknown. You know, no one had heard of him. I remember when they announced him.
And
but
he's got chops, too. Like, he did another movie. I forget what it was called. But, like, he was really good in it at the time. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look it up, but anyway.
So I got here, among the many established actors who auditioned for the role of Anakin Skywalker were the late Jonathan Brandis, Devon Sawa, Topher Grace, which...
God, imagine.
I mean, if it was anything like Venom, I mean, it would have been amazing. Joshua Jackson, for you Mighty Ducks.
It was Life as a House, by the way.
Life as a House.
He was supposedly fantastic in it.
Ryan Phillippe.
Oh, I would have liked that.
Colin Hanks. Paul Walker.
Colin Hanks would have been
and
weird.
Apparently Leonardo DiCaprio had met with George Lucas regarding the role, but was unavailable.
Mm.
So interesting. Those were the known actors who auditioned, but he decided to go with an unknown. And really, I mean, you look at the original cast, they were all unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody in that original movie except for Alec Guinness, who was a known actor to Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's better now. He's better in the scenes that aren't love dialogue. Like, I like the interactions he has with Obi-Wan. Like, he does portray, like, you know, when you first see him, he's very nervous. And, like, they're going back and forth. And he does much better in Revenge of the Sith. And I'm excited to see him in Obi-Wan and Ahsoka because he's going to be in both.
I can't wait. Yeah. I'm intrigued how much he's going to be in Obi-Wan.
Like, yeah.
Is it going to be just a tease and we're going to see him more in the
Ahsoka?
Or is it going to be like, we're going to see him first episode?
I think he's going to be more of a tease cameo in Ahsoka because it takes place after Return. So probably more flashbacks or even Force Ghost. I mean, you could play that game now.
Is Obi-Wan supposed to happen after episode 3?
Yes. It is in between episode 3 and 4.
All right. I don't think it's after
Luke and Leia are born, and he's given Luke to
the Larses.
So I would imagine that Anakin's either it's a flashback scene.
It's full on Darth Vader.
It's full on Darth Vader.
Oh, it is Vader. Okay.
No. My thing is that we're going to see him out. You know, we're going to see his face outside of the mask.
There are rumors that they are going to have a rematch, like a duel. And I'm very excited. Because, again, one of the cool things about this movie is we're seeing the Jedi at the peak of their power. And that's the whole point. The power corrupts everyone. Yes. And the Jedi, they were not immune to it at all. So we get a really good, interesting dynamic with all that stuff. Like, what do the Jedi do? And, you know, Mace Windu is the first one. He's like, we're keepers of the peace. We're not soldiers.
Yeah.
But by the end of the movie, they're all generals and soldiers. We mentioned Natalie Portman a little bit, but she does come back. Now she is senator. She's considered a hero by her people. Very strong moral compass, very strong sense of right or wrong.
And basically the gist of the plot is she has basically, you know, an assassination attempt has happened on her. And, you know, now it's just basically protecting her.
Mm-hmm. So we do find out that the main architect behind it is Christopher Lee's new character, Count Dooku / Darth Tyrannus. Now, this is also the start of some of the weirdest name choices that we ever get. Imagine if somebody told you, oh man, the bad guy's coming. What's his name? Dooku. No, really. What's his name? Like, really? Dooku's coming again?
But then Christopher Lee shows up and you do not want to make fun of his name.
No. But
and this is, I'm happy because this was during Christopher Lee's resurgence. You know, he obviously was in the Lord of the Rings and now he did this and then he appeared in like every Tim Burton film until his death. So this was great to see Christopher Lee.
He was an interesting villain because he was very Darth Vader. For the most part, when we first see him, he's just evil because he's evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
he's a machine, and he's basically, you know, why am I blanking on the character's name? Peter Cushing.
Oh, Grand Moff
Governor Tarkin.
Yeah,
he's basically Governor Tarkin's like bodyguard. He has no power at all. Dooku is a former Jedi.
Former Jedi. He was trained by Yoda. He trains Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon Jinn, you find out.
Yeah,
and just, you know, decided that, you know, the Jedi was not what it was, and
he became a politician.
Became a politician.
And I like how they defend him in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, they do.
He's a former Jedi.
He's cool. Like, we like that guy.
There's no way he would turn to the Sith.
But he even lays it out to Obi-Wan. He's like, yo, guess what? There's actually a Sith in charge of the entire Senate right now.
Yeah.
Because Jar Jar Binks gave him emergency. Jar Jar Binks ruined the galaxy.
Pretty much.
Again, he's the secret Sith.
Secret Sith.
I love that theory.
I love that theory.
So now the fun fact here is, obviously, George Lucas, I guess, listened to the fans because Jar Jar Binks is basically a cameo.
Oh,
in
yeah,
this movie.
They definitely.
So, like, you know, they were like, we're not going down this road again with this character. Because that might be the biggest fail in terms of a character that was expected to be like a huge toy promotion seller like that. I mean, just so it's crazy, you know, that he just got reduced basically to a cameo in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And then even worse in the third movie, he just says, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. He's got like, it's like one scene basically.
Barely. But I really do enjoy Count Dooku. I think
does he know that Palpatine is the
Sidious?
He does know. Okay, I wasn't sure.
But and then we have just going down the list, Samuel L. Jackson returning as Mace Windu. He has
a lot more to do in this movie.
Yeah.
And the first appearance of his purple lightsaber.
Yes.
Which is awesome. Obviously we'll get into the ending of the movie later, and we'll talk about that. But he definitely has a lot more to do in this movie.
Frank Oz is Yoda. This is the first time he is fully CGI. Because in The Phantom Menace, he was a puppet in the original production, and then he was CGI.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't make a puppet move that way like you can in this movie.
Oh, God. Let's talk about that. So Yoda does have also his first fight scene. It was legendary in the theaters seeing it.
That might have been the first ever audience crazy reaction I was ever a part of in a theater.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
When you know, they're doing the Force Lightning, you know, duel, and then Dooku's like, you know, we're gonna do this with the lightsaber, and you just pulls out that lightsaber and he just starts jumping all around.
He didn't know what to expect.
But I also feel like he did like a little flex too, because he's like, everybody else draws it. He's like, no, I'm gonna have the Force levitate into my hand, from my pocket, from my holster.
Oh yeah. The whole theater exploded. Because also this was a time before spoilers. Like, it was hard to get spoilers.
The internet
was
still, like, you know, not there yet in terms of the spoilers.
I mean, you would
there was no social media.
It was harder to sneak a camera in to film this
stuff.
It
was Ain't It Cool News was really, like, that's where you got your stuff.
Yeah, pretty much.
You got Ian McDiarmid obviously coming back as Chancellor Palpatine / Darth Sidious. And he is, you know, he's the mastermind still.
It's actually really cool seeing him, because you knowing again where things lead, you're like, oh wow, he's clearly manipulating all this stuff, and it's kind of cool. You see, he's definitely playing. Like, how do you miss that?
I said that last in the Phantom Menace. You see it in the Phantom Menace, and I'm like, I never caught on to that as a kid, but now seeing it as an adult, you're like, wow, this guy just absolutely manipulated
everything. Oh yeah.
He plays everybody.
Plays the game.
Yeah.
And he gets granted emergency powers. And we also find out that he also secretly got this clone army going. And you know, like, everybody, even like the Trade Federation was like, wait, where did these guys come from? Like, he's really playing, and he's building the Death Star too. We get the plans at the end, which was a fun little thing.
That was a fun Easter egg.
It was. Now we also have Temuera Morrison, and let's see, what's his name? Daniel Logan. So as the Fetts, Jango and Boba Fett, respectively. Fun fact, we did meet the guy who played Boba Fett at Icon,
Long Island.
Oh, cool.
Over 10 years ago.
No, what was cool was they have a party there on that Saturday night that we stayed for, and he got boxed on the dance floor and was all over the place. It was the funniest thing in the world.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so Boba Fett can bust a move, just so you guys know. But also, this is Temuera Morrison as Jango Fett, and obviously now he's playing Boba Fett as an adult. I liked Jango Fett. I liked his look. I liked the shiny Mandalorian armor. I loved so much about it, but he's really just kind of there to be badass.
Yeah, pretty much.
But he's the bounty hunter that's outsourcing bounty hunting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to get his hands dirty, I guess.
Right. So I wonder how much money he makes. I feel like he does well. Anybody else on the cast that we really want to talk about?
I mean, obviously, you know, Anthony Daniels and Kenny Baker, just because they're, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2.
We find out R2-D2 can fly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just a couple. Jimmy Smits, and you don't know who he is. He is Bail Organa, who find out, obviously, in Revenge of the Sith, becomes the adopted father of Leia. Rose Byrne, I think in one of her first roles, she plays Dorme, one of the handmaidens of Padme.
Oh, yeah. She dies in the beginning.
Is that the one?
No, that's not her. Well, it could be her, but then you see her again later in the movie. She might be playing multiple characters. I don't know. Oh. And Joel Edgerton, you meet him as Owen Lars, and he will be reprising the role along with Bonnie Pease, who plays Beru. Both of them will be reprising their roles in the Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus. Looking forward.
I think my favorite movie with Joel, and I think he's in Warrior. I think.
Oh yeah, with Tom Hardy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies with him.
That was a good one.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the themes of this movie. Obviously, there is a really big romance theme. Thoughts on the romantic subplot? Okay.
So,
Sean's already.
So the issue I have with this is because in Phantom Menace, you have a kid actor playing Anakin, and you have, yes, you have Natalie Portman playing Padme. You jump 10 years, it's the same actress playing Padme, but it's a totally different actor playing, you know, Anakin. Just something weird. It doesn't
bad chemistry.
My thoughts I had on it was more like, it's kind of like the Aladdin problem. So when they were first making Aladdin, the original story was Aladdin's gonna be like this 8-year-old boy, and Jasmine's the same age, and like, well, we all see why we'd be into Jasmine. Why would Jasmine look at, like, if you find this 8-year-old boy, this young person, anybody attractive? So that's why they aged Aladdin up to make
it's like the movie Blank Check.
Yes, like Blank Check, exactly. And so I'm thinking that's what happened in Phantom Menace, is they have this, oh god, of course this girl's gorgeous and I'm whatever, and so he has all that emotion. He's still an 8-year-old boy, doesn't know how to talk to girls or, you know, express his feelings in a way that is not creepy and not. And every line, I just felt like, oh my god, that sounds so terrible.
Oh,
now.
It's so cringy. It is, you know, the dialogue is rough.
I think a little either Lucas was channeling his inner 14-year-old self and thinking, well, how would this maladapted, emotionally distraught child try to express himself to the girl of his dreams? And it sounds like I'm trying to do something nice for you, but like you're going about it the wrong way. Like I'm protecting you by watching me sleep and by doing all these other, you know, all these little things he says. Just like,
but he even gets whiny with her at one point where she's like, oh, he's not a master Jedi. He's like, I'm still in charge of security.
Yeah, yeah.
You lady. Yeah.
And that just, again, the show
you
more
just, you hear Jake Lloyd, and you're like, I could hear Jake Lloyd say the exact same line.
Now, this is pod racing. Shut up, Jake.
This is, well, again, it shows, again, more his emotional immaturity, which also makes it so much more unbelievable. Like, you spent the
that
first...
That she actually falls in love with him.
In the first half of the movie, you're like, why are you my detail? I don't want to be near you at all. Anakin, we shouldn't do this. And then you're like, and then the whole point, like, You confessed your feelings about Sand, and now I'm in love with you. I'm like, I don't buy it.
Sand is romantic.
I must use that. Sand apparently works.
I secretly think it's because the Jedi are not allowed to take care of their own business, so he's just that repressed and pent up.
Probably.
Gotta let the lightsaber out, you know what I mean? But they are like warrior monks. I said it. You know? You just see Yoda in the back room. Oh, horny am I? But yeah, it's cringy, it's rough. And it's definitely it takes you out of the movie.
Yeah.
But even this, when he's trying to be dramatic, I don't want to like bash on Hayden Christensen because I do like him in Revenge of the Sith. He does much better. But like, you know, I killed them all, the women, and like he has this weird big mouth when he's angry. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. Like, and he kills a lot of people in this.
In this one and in Revenge of the Sith.
He kills kids.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In both movies.
He killed kids and people. I killed men and women and children. And
she's got some weird hookups. And like that, like, it's not like, I feel for you, but now I'm not in love with you. Oh. I do think it's interesting because I know there was...
It's because there were sand.
Lucas is doing whatever, maybe his ideas about women or whatnot. But like, I very thought of how much her outfit in the confession scene, in the fireplace scene. I'm like, she's very much a dominatrix in this one for some reason. I'm like, he put her in that. Like, and then I know there's been some things about what Lucas wanted to have some of the main cast women we be wearing in some scenes. So I was like, okay. There's a little bit of that shining through.
At least it wasn't a metal bikini.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that scene did have good use of light and shadow in him. Yeah, him in the shadow and her in the light, which is a theme. I think this is where they start doing that a little bit more of, again, foreshadowing his fall to the dark side.
I also noticed that like this is the start of them standing on opposite ends of the room while talking to each other. They do it a lot, especially in the best is in episode 3 when she's on the balcony, like combing her hair, and she's like, I want to have our baby on Naboo. And he's just like standing in the doorway with his arms crossed. And then they have an even weirder exchange where she's like, you know, like, he's like, why are you so beautiful? And she's like, because I'm so in love. And he's like, no, I'm in love with you. And she's like, so love has made you blind. And I'm like, oh, God, no, it's back.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It was just on, so it's really fresh. But yeah, like the cringe.
I was like, damn, Paul.
The cringe doesn't stop in this movie. Between the two of them, because Natalie Portman's an established actress.
She's an award-winning actress.
She was amazing. I think she was one of the best actresses in the whole movie. She's like, even with the bad lines or whatnot, or even with these rough scenes, it's like, but she's still coming. You know, I still buy everything she's selling, at least.
But, you know, speaking of selling, everybody's buying what Palpatine's selling in this movie.
It's definitely, you know, you can definitely compare it to, you know, the Hitler rise in Germany. Similar storyline, you know. So how he was granted emergency powers. So
propaganda, just like he does it right.
He definitely harkens on those themes with the rise.
And they play Jar Jar. Like they're like, you know, only Senator Amidala was here, she'd be brave enough to do the. And Jar Jar sitting there like, Misa got this.
Well, at least we got a Robot Chicken episode where he kills Jar Jar. But then he's like haunted by the force ghost of Jar Jar.
To going to that, I know it goes more towards the end of the movie, but when Yoda starts saying that we have the Clone Wars have begun, and then it's been pans out to the Imperial March starts playing, and then you see a parade of these soldiers, and you have the soon-to-be Emperor up there, Palpatine, or Darth, whatever, he's up there looking over everything with the march plays, and I feel like this imagery is usually associated with, again, with the Nazisms and some of those parades, and you usually think of a dictator, and you're like, but these are the good guys, right? This is the army of the Republic, and I thought the scene played out well in terms of showing, like, it's flipping it on us, that these are all the things we usually associate with bad guys, but technically these are supposed to be the good guys, so it's, I guess the scene's trying to tell us that these are good guys. You can't see my air quotes, Mark. Air quote, good guys are actually the bad guys, right? Or becoming the bad guys.
Well, that's why I like watching like Rogue One or even Episode 4, where you're seeing what the Empire was doing. Like, because in all honesty, we don't ever see the Empire really being evil. We're told they're evil.
We're introduced, you know, as there's an uproar against the Empire. You know, a battle to go against the Empire. We never see the Empire at its full.
The closest we get is Rogue One. The closest we get.
And I like
with
to
them.
Think, you know, Obi-Wan will get a lot of that as well.
I'm excited to see, like, because it's going to be kind of the start of the Empire, and,
basically.
Because
it looks like Luke is supposed to be like 8-9 years old,
something like that. Yeah.
So it's been,
even makes it even weirder in what's it called in A New Hope when he's like, "What's a Jedi?"
Yeah.
You mean that thing 40 years ago that everyone knew about?
Oh yeah, exactly.
I feel like unless Tatooine didn't get a lot of that, you know?
Have to understand his aunt and uncle didn't tell him anything.
I know, but you would imagine, like, did he go to Tatooine school? Sand school?
Did he? I don't know that.
I want to go to the Tashi station. I don't know who is whinier.
Pick up some power converters.
The best is the Robot Chicken bit where it's actually a strip club called the Tashi Station.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, all right, coming up next are the power converters. And he's like,
I just love the Family Guy. It's like, you know, I'm going to go shoot some wombats. And he goes, you shoot little animals? That's like the sign of a sociopath. There's two sons and there's no women. What the hell am I supposed to do?
Oh, I love it. But let's talk about the ending to this movie.
Part of the movie.
Yes. So basically, it does end with like the arena execution, which, you know, if they just killed the three of them, it would have been much easier.
Yeah.
Like, well, then we
Then, yeah, then no more movies.
But then how?
Well, that's then how do?
Oh well, no, that's actually, I'm cross-eyed. The biggest issue I think with that part of the movie actually is because there's no stakes. We all know they survived the third one. We just because we have the lore. So it's like, all right, so these three are not really in dire straits because we know they can make it to the next one. It's just a matter of seeing how they get out.
Two things happen. One, we introduce generic armies so that we don't care about it all. So when they get mowed down, we're like, okay, cool.
But this is also the most Jedi we'll ever see on a screen at any single time.
And that's number two. They introduce Jedi that die. And like, there's one that Jango Fett just blows away.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being, like, the one Jedi that's like, I have a lot of trouble with laser deflection, but I'm going to try.
I would like to think, I also, you know, we liked the fight between Jango and Obi-Wan. Jango got just owned by Mace Windu. I mean, he didn't even try.
No. Yeah. And he kicked Obi-Wan's ass. So, I would argue that Jango Fett beat Obi-Wan.
I agree, yeah.
And Obi-Wan tanked, like, blaster fire from his ship.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the asteroid chase between the two of them.
True.
Great scene. The sonic bombs were fantastic and a nice addition to the Star Wars lore.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically the Jedi come in to save them as Yoda's going to Kamino to see what this army's all about.
Yeah.
And it's a very good action scene. It's a nice combination of the Jedi doing what they do, the new battle droids. So you got the super battle droids.
It's a very good homage to the old Ray Harryhausen movies. Mm-hmm. You know, like the effects of the, you know, stop motion animation. Thank you. It had a feel like that after seeing that movie. It just felt like, you know, watching the Seven Voyages of Sinbad or Jason and the Argonauts in a way. You know,
I will say the one thing that always takes me out of it is the C-3PO stuff during it.
Yeah, it wasn't needed. It was too. That was just trying to force C-3PO on us, which he got so, you know, nothing to do in Phantom Menace. So it was good seeing him.
Yeah, like, nothing to do in this. Really,
but it was bringing back. It was bringing back the whole, you know, like, it was redoing the scene in Empire Strikes Back where he's, like, on the back of Chewie and, you know, like, the same exact things. Oh, what's going on here?
And,
you know,
like,
oh,
I'm saying, that was some of the issues I feel like is people, like, well, okay, in the second one this happened to Seether, we got to do it again. And it just felt like, why aren't we doing new things? Why do we have to keep redoing the same plot points?
As I said, my biggest gripe with the Phantom Menace was making C-3PO built by Anakin.
Yeah.
I think that pissed me off.
Yeah.
Not so much as a kid, but as I've gotten older, I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
There was no reason for that. You just make him a protocol droid that somehow ends up, you know, on Tatooine. They find him.
You
he helps them.
You didn't even need them in the original one, honestly.
You didn't, but it was, you had to.
There would have been an uproar.
There would have been something.
There was an uproar when R2 was barely in Force Awakens.
Because you made it seem like he was going to be a lot more invaluable because of the last thing of Luke, but he ends up being the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
But I just felt like we don't need those droids because why can't that? I think giving them a distinct thing, like, hey, these are the droids we follow then, and there was some maybe a different R2 unit or a different looking thing. Like we had like BB-8.
They weren't the droids you were looking for.
Exactly. I wanted some different droids or just make the world look, you know, not always revolve around the same
Sean,
things.
Sean, who'd win in a fight? BB-8? Or R2-D2.
Oh,
R2-D2.
Hands down, R2-D2.
I feel like BB-8 would fight dirty and smarter.
No, I think R2-D2 would fight dirty.
I think R2-D2
is a little sociopath.
He's
man.
Also got more war experience. I mean, remember?
He will put a bomb on BB-8 and blow him to kingdom come. I have no problem believing that.
One of my favorite BB-8 moments is actually in The Last Jedi, which I hate. In the very beginning, when everything's breaking in Poe's ship, and he's just constantly trying to fix things, and then eventually he just pushes his head against the panel. I don't know. I feel like BB-8 would put up a good fight.
One of the more memorable moments for me in Revenge of the Sith is in the beginning when R2-D2's like, "Oh, let me put some like oil gasoline down and just light everybody on fire."
Yeah.
I always feel like kick out of that.
Imagine if R2-D2 was able to fly in the other movies instead of pushing C-3PO just off Jabba's barge and falling himself.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's another one of those things that take you out of like, wait a minute, like especially when it's a prequel, like he couldn't do that before. Why didn't he do it then?
Laziness.
Apparently.
Star Wars fuel's getting expensive like our gas prices.
Oh, God.
But I think that kind of brings us to the end. Any other points that we want to make sure we bring up before
I have three things that I thought. I think Natalie Portman's outfit with the whole white with the midriff was supposed to be pretty iconic. The problem is there's no reason for it because if you're looking at the scene I was looking at, like, all right, still covered. She gets attacked in the back, so that clearly rips off the bottom part of her shirt. So I thought that was a good laugh.
Sure, logic.
Exactly. I thought a really cool scene with Anakin killing the Raiders. That scene transition when after you switch to Yoda, you hear the audio cues of Qui-Gon Jinn yelling, "Anakin, no!"
That was a good scene.
breathing of Darth Vader and a quiet version of the Imperial March plays as Mace Windu is talking to Yoda there. And then my last legal question we have here is, can droids act as witnesses to a wedding?
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently.
Oh.
Exactly.
That's thank you for reminding me. What the F with the arm at the end of the movie?
What about it?
Why is it like a Jar Jar Binks looking arm? Like, you're telling me you couldn't come up with what Luke got at the end of Empire?
No, they weren't ready for that yet.
Oh, stop.
The Jedi have a religious exemption to healthcare.
It's like a tattoo. It was just the first, it was the line art, and then they're going to add more to it.
Oh, my God.
A few more sessions.
I remember that, and I'm like, I laughed. I was like, really? That's what you guys came up with? You couldn't just make it a fake arm? Like,
yeah, it was, you know, 15 minutes notice.
15 minutes notice.
It is jarring, but let's do a Star City rating for Attack of the Clones. I will go first. I think I would be close to a 2.5, but I'll argue a 3. There is still some good stuff in it, and I think it does get the worst rep as the prequel trilogy goes, but there's some good stuff in it, and there are some great moments in it, but I do find myself, all right, well, this is the part that I fast forward. Basically, from when they land on Naboo to when they're getting ready to leave, I can fast forward, and you lose nothing from the movie.
No, I agree with you.
So I'm going to go with a generous 3.
Generous 3? I'm going to go just solid 3. I very much enjoyed this movie a lot when I was younger. When it first came out, I would watch it a lot more than I do now. I love the ending. The Yoda-Count Dooku lightsaber fight is fantastic. The opening, the beginning of the movie with the chase of the bounty hunter through Coruscant, I enjoyed that scene.
I always did like it was cool when he's like, I'm just going to jump off the car. I always loved that scene.
Yeah. I like the back and forth between them because it's this older brother, little brother, you know, antagonistic.
They have a history,
like,
and you can tell.
But they've been together for 10 years. It's not Qui-Gon
and Obi-Wan
because Qui-Gon was much older. Obi-Wan is not that much older than Anakin when you really think about it.
Surprised he didn't start flirting with him.
He's 10 years older than Anakin in a perfect world.
And the Jedi preach no attachments and they talk about being family.
Yeah. But there are good parts about this movie. There are unwatchable parts about this movie. But altogether, I think it's a little less than Phantom Menace, and I'll go with a 3.
Brendan?
I was actually going to go with like a 2. Cool. It's because for me, rewatching it again, I'm like, this is really rough with both the dialogue of times. I feel like the CGI takes you out of the movie a lot of the times with some of the set pieces, especially very much in the beginning. In the very beginning of the movie, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm there. So those were some of the things where this is really rough. There are some cool moments, but cool moments don't always make the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
So those were I'm going to go with it too. It's something where I'm like, if we're doing a rewatch, I'm like, can we skip this episode? I really don't care for it. Just have a splicer version of it.
Yeah. All right. So
can I just one quick thing? So in terms of box office reaction to this movie, it is the only Star Wars movie of the first two trilogies that was not the top grosser of its release year.
Mm-hmm.
So the top grosser for 2002 was A Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, followed by the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, and then, Attack of the Clones. But just think of the movies that came out this year. I mean, you had, obviously, what I just said, Spider-Man, Lord of the Rings. You had The Matrix Reloaded. You had the Harry Potter films were just starting up. The Phantom Sorcerer's Stone came out that past November. Chamber of Secrets comes out later in the year. I mean, just, 2002 was a big year for movies.
It was, but you would think, out of what you said, comparing it to the ones that lost to Twin Towers and Spider-Man, I think this movie is definitely a lot worse than any.
Oh, I agree.
But I also know, again, when we talk about, you can't just go by the critics, because sometimes critics and movies are bad, but the audiences will still make however many millions of dollars at the box office. But it should have definitely beaten like The Matrix, I would think, at least comparing a PG. Is this PG-13 or PG?
This is PG.
A PG movie compared to an R definitely should have done better than that, I would say, that year if it didn't.
No, it did. It did.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah, it was just not the one. It was the only one that wasn't the number one grossed movie of the year.
Yeah.
In which case, it lost to some really awesome movies.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because this movie is rated PG. The next one, Revenge of the Sith, is PG-13, and one of the reasons is for the implied killing of children.
The implied, we see it.
I know, but that's the actual rating.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what it actually says. But he
says it.
Kills kids in this movie too. Nobody bats an eye.
Yeah.
I think it's
Sam People Rights.
It's all the hell metaphors on Mustafar.
Oh yeah. All right. So we do. We actually have two fan feedback Fridays
because
Oh, I didn't answer this one. I'll do it here.
All right. So last week we had describe what your ideal lightsaber would be: color, single blade, double blade, cross guard, etc. So we got some good ones from Ronnie guy. Oh god, he's so annoying. So this is tough. God, already I'm already just not invested. We'll skip him. No. I would like a blue lightsaber with a cross guard. However, I feel like the purple would be the ideal fit and given to me.
Sounds like someone going through a drive-thru at McDonald's.
It sounds like somebody with a huge ego. Like just all it's gonna be given to him. Whatever. From Rob's film class. For the record, Ronnie is sitting right next to me, just so everybody's clear. Ronnie, do you really think you
would... It's his Force Ghost.
Again, a purple lightsaber?
I really do.
Yeah, he really does. Let's see. From Rob's film class, we have a short yellow blade, like the guards for the Jedi Temple in the Clone Wars show. Yeah, Jedi Sentinels typically have the yellow. Let's see. Other ones, single blade white. All right, I'd be down for that. That'd be a cool look. Let's see. Double blade rainbow, because taste it. Single blade red. That red flag, kid. Double blade green, cross guard blue, single blade purple or lilac. A lot of purple, like a lot of less
than
common colors.
They want to find themselves in the movie when they're fighting in the big battle scenes.
Cross guard orange, that'd be cool.
There you go.
Our friend Joe, purple and red all day from Revan, the character from Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah, and his second choice, green. And then from Rob, double-bladed purple with hints of pink. Sean, what kind of lightsaber would you be?
I don't care. I was never that big into what the lightsaber was.
Brendan?
I would love a double-bladed one, but I feel like I'm going to cut myself more likely with that than a single blade.
Yeah.
So a single blade, and then I have no idea what color I'd go for. I'm trying to think of what... Let's go with green for the power of willpower. Let's go with that one.
Double-bladed green.
How about you?
Double-bladed green. That would be mine. You? Yeah, that'd be mine. Green. Yeah. All right, and then this week, not a Star Wars question because I suck. This week, who is
how many Star Wars questions can you come up with?
I probably could have. I forgot it was Star Wars month. I'm still recovering.
Yes, it's COVID brain. Yeah.
There's a lot of Star Wars responses. I probably think of this.
Who is a protagonist that would make a terrifying antagonist? I'm not gonna lie, mine. I like mine. Woody from Toy Story.
He kind of was the antagonist in the.
But
first
imagine
movie.
If he was just like Chucky style. Like, oh, God.
There's a snake in my boot. That's not a snake.
Terrifying. Oh, Andy's sleeping. Sure would be a shame if he died. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Let's see. From Rob's film class, Percy Jackson. That'd be fun. Lightning McQueen. He was the antagonist. Come on. Professor McGonagall.
What is it with cars?
I don't know.
I don't get it.
I hate that movie.
That class. Yeah.
Optimus Prime. Tom from 500 Days of Summer. Sonic the Hedgehog. Sherlock Holmes. That would be scary.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's terrifying.
Elmo. Gumball, Watterson, SpongeBob. Oh, SpongeBob. Thomas the Tank Engine. Merida from Brave. Doctor Strange and Jar Jar Binks. Those are some good ones.
I got one, actually. I forgot I meant to tell you. I would say Kevin McAllister.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah, there's always the theory that he actually turned into Jigsaw, but anyway. Let's see. We also got Katniss. Forrest Gump. That's funny. John Wick. Vision. Ferris Bueller. There's also a film theory that he was actually like a figment of Cameron's imagination the whole time.
Huh. Yeah. So what about the girl?
Whatever.
I just love it.
Poe from Kung Fu Panda. Baymax. Oh. Our friend Mike, I think, just did Jeffrey the giraffe from Toys R Us.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We got, I don't know what this is, a Tushi from Bungo Stray Dogs. Sure. Forrest Gump. That guy's everywhere. And George Washington for reasons. It's not a movie character, but okay. Anybody else that you guys can think of?
I think Roger Rabbit would be an interesting...
Oh, God, yeah. The laws of physics don't apply to him.
No.
Yeah. Oh. Yoda. That would have been good. Evil Yoda would have been fun. Anybody else? Brendan, you got...
I said Kevin McAllister. Anybody else? I prepared the one really good one. I was trying to think of what was
you
a really...
You did have a really good one.
Otherwise, it's like, okay, it's
just
evil.
Naming a good guy who will be bad.
Yeah.
You got to really
what John
think
McClane
about
you want? I don't know. Like
that would actually be a lot. I'd watch that movie. Evil John McClane.
I'm tired of saving the world. It's
well,
time
Ronnie,
for me.
Ronnie said John Wick. That'd be terrifying,
John
too.
Wick is... Yeah, that's a good one.
That'd be
that's
like a horror movie. But anyway. So that's going to wrap us up for today. First and foremost, we want to thank Brendan for jumping in with us. Brendan, how can people find your YouTube channel again?
You go to YouTube. You do a search for BLNDBAT8719, BlindBat8719, and you'll see a nice little bat logo there, and that's me. So click subscribe, like the channel, follow along, click the notification icon, and help me grow the channel. And thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure, man.
It was a lot of fun.
We know him.
Wow. Yeah. Say what you really feel, Paul.
I did.
You're still recovering, aren't you?
A little bit. But so make sure you guys check us out on some of our other social media too. You can find us basically if you type in the Misfit Faction anywhere, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. The biggest thing, guys, if you are listening to the podcast, just make sure you download the episodes, leave us reviews, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you guys just leave us a couple of stars, a couple of kind words, it really does help. Helps us grow the show as well.
You are awesome, Paul.
No. You got to do it on the actual. Sean doesn't listen to the podcast. Work. I actually listen to the podcast.
Good for you.
All right, then.
I don't like to listen to myself talk.
For me, it's like great because I don't always get a chance to see you guys. So listening to the podcast, like actually hanging out with you guys, I'm like, I totally get all the jokes and everything. So it's great for me.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I remember this. Yeah.
So that's going to wrap us up for tonight. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Brendan.
And we'll be back next week. Nothing, Sean? You don't want to say goodbye? Or?
Oh, I said goodbye. I'm Paul. I'm Sean.
May the force be with
Brendan.
You.
I said that last week.
Ah, dang. Okay.
Okay, bye.